the OTB Podcast Network.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Okay, so lots going on. We had the Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals at the weekend. We have Lions squad announced on Thursday. Brian O'Driscoll, evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Let's start with the weekend then. La Rochelle against Toulouse at Twickenham. Toulouse beat Bordeaux on the Saturday, and then O'Gara. I mean, I'm surprised he wasn't jumping the hoardings again. Incredible. 32 points to 23 against Leinster. So overall take on this game. La Rochelle won this more than Leinster lost it, or a bit of both?
No, I think the former. La Rochelle, very, very good in the second half. Leinster didn't help themselves. They just, I don't think it was as bad as Saracens, but it did feel a bit like their Achilles heel coming back again, where, you know, that really physically dominant pack, you know, beating up our pack and stopping any source of possession, and then, you know, doing so much damage with ball in hand, came back again at us. And if you look at some of the ball carriers that La Rochelle had, Skelton was unbelievable. Antonio played for, you know, 65 minutes. He's 23 stone, and looked as fit as anyone else out there. Aldrich was brilliant. Bourgerie, their hooker, was outstanding in carrying and making nuisance of himself at the ruck. So lots of different factors kind of worked against Leinster, on top of them shooting themselves in the foot a little bit. Like they left a couple of gilt-edged chances out there. And these games are all games of momentum. And you just, you know, you have to, you ride the purple patch of the opposition. You got to take your chance when they present themselves. And when they're few and far between, you have to make them count. And Leinster didn't manage to do that and never got any momentum in the second half.
Mm. Because Leinster started well. La Rochelle gave away 5 penalties in the first 10 minutes. Leinster were up by a point at the interval. What was your sense of the game then?
Yeah, obviously they look very physically, you know, dominant. They made a shambles of multiple kickoff receipts. Dylan Lades couldn't get the trajectory of the ball in the sun, which I'm sure he's well used to playing in, but it, for some reason he just couldn't get it, and it gave Leinster access deep into La Rochelle territory, and they were patient. You know, the first 5 or 6 minutes, the referee lost his patience with Liebenberg, sent him to the bin, and it was, you know, it was no more than Leinster deserved at 7-0. But they just kind of, you know, La Rochelle never went away, and they never put that early possession and territory, you know, into points on the scoreboard. They should have been a couple of scores up. They shouldn't have, you know, let La Rochelle can eat their way back into the game. They got a line-out drive, and then they kicked a penalty, and all of a sudden it's 7-3 when they've barely had a touch of the ball. So there were small little things like that kind of hung over, and you thought, gosh, they really need to make this count, because you know what the potential of that La Rochelle team is, which we subsequently got for the next 60 minutes.
And what changed in your view? Because for anyone who's just looking at the scoreboard, 32-23, I mean, it's a very good win, but it was actually really double scores into the last kind of 10 minutes. Ross Burns scored that late try, which almost fell kind of consolation territory. So what did La Rochelle do in the second half that Leinster just couldn't cope with?
Yeah, I think the scoreline probably ultimately in the end did flatter Leinster a small bit because of that late score. At the ruck, I've never seen Leinster so exposed at ruck time. Their hooker Bourgerie must have had 2 or 3 turnovers. Dylan Lades got one. Antonio got one. They were all picking up turnovers. And when you can't get any, you know, fluidity to your game plan if you're turning over ball after 3 or 4 phases. And one of La Rochelle's biggest attacking weapons is their line-out, because of their line-out maul and because of the power and size of them. Even though they weren't brilliant throughout the whole game, but even when Leinster, you know, disrupted the line out and got the ball back, their exits from that, they just kicked the ball directly back to them, or kicked it into touch and gave them another opportunity at it. So it felt as though there was probably a bit of lack of control at halfback. I was trying to wonder whether things would have been dramatically different if Jonathan Sexton was at 10. I think there would have been, you know, his experience, he would have known how to kind of manipulate the La Rochelle defence, which was incredibly good for the whole game. But it just felt as though they were flying off the line, and they needed to be checked a little bit. They needed a little dink in behind, like La Rochelle did to Leinster. They needed to kick, you know, go for another one or two kick passes just to make sure that their wingers were holding reasonable width. None of those things were challenged.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, conversely, La Rochelle had massive range to their game. They obviously had the huge power play up front, but Ohio West had an armchair ride. He was, you know, picking his passes. He was, you know, kicking to Vito out on the touchline. And then, you know, he was kicking his goals on top of that. So it just felt like a real no errors sort of game plan. Other than those initial 10 minutes from La Rochelle, they didn't do an awful lot wrong. Defended stoically. Their willingness to get up off the ground and present extra bodies in the front line, not have any, you know, dead bodies lying on the ground, was a real point of difference. And conversely, Leinster were having to recycle, you know, ball with 3-4 players in each ruck, and straight away it was a numbers game advantage, La Rochelle and the defensive line, and that's where the line speed came from. So there were so many different aspects that you could kind of retrospectively pull apart, but it was a very frustrating day for Leinster, because they got beaten up, but they had chances to put themselves into a place where momentum would have counted. They gave up try-scoring opportunities just before halftime. Larmer made a break down the touchline and threw a poor pass to Luke McGrath. And then right after halftime, Ryan Baird, it was kind of a bit of a nothing play. A ball got batted down and he came galloping through and got an arm through a stray ball. If that sticks, you know, it's a try in the corner and it's two scores ahead. So these things are key in semifinals. And they, you know, La Rochelle rode their luck in that regard, and then just built momentum and squeezed the life out of Leinster.
So if we were to try and look for some common traits in Leinster's failings in the last couple of Heineken Champions Cup matches, knockout matches, this one and then the two against Saracens, and admittedly the middle Saracens one, they just killed Leinster at the scrum and were up and had a lead, and it gets very, very difficult then. But the thing people would say from afar is these big physical teams Leinster have a bit of a problem with. How much of it is down to size and power here, in your opinion?
There's definitely an element to it, no doubt whatsoever. But I think good teams are able to get beyond that too. And I just don't feel as though they played to any space. Now, they weren't, in many ways, they weren't allowed through ball in hand. But if you're not allowed to do that, if there's a rush defence coming from the outside, you've got to be able to find that space with the boot. And a kick pass, you know, flat 20 meter kick pass can be way more effective than three passes out of back line when there's a huge press. But it just didn't feel as though that was ever on the cards. There was one time that Ross Byrne went on penalty advantage to James Lowe, and it was a great kick and just dropped a little bit too far. There's another chance, you know, that drops 1 yard shorter, Lowe catches it full tilt, takes on Bryce Doolan, probably going to beat him one-on-one. There's a score. So as much as you're reading lots of reports, and it's kind of doom and gloom for Leinster because it feels the same as Saracens again, they still had lots of access into the game, into creating opportunities for themselves. And other than the first try, they took, the first one and the Ross Byrne one at the end, they took no others. And you know, when La Rochelle were keeping the scoreboard ticking over the way they were with Ohio West goal kicks and his drop goal, and then built on that with the scores, it was a real Munster feel to that. It's what Rog has done for years. 3-6-9 try, and all of a sudden you're two scores ahead or three scores ahead, and you're kind of thinking, how did that happen? So my feeling is that there's definitely an issue when really physical teams do come up against Leinster, that's for sure. But they have the capabilities of seeing their way through that, but they didn't manage to do that on this occasion. I don't think, if you look at it as well, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, semi-final wise, people are saying it feels like Leinster are a mile away from a Heineken final. They're not. You flip that fixture and have it in the RDS, Leinster are comfortable favourites, and they might be able to see it through, and there's home advantage plays a big factor in that. So you're never that far away. If they go out and play La Rochelle again tomorrow, they won't lose to them by 11 points. I really don't think they will. So they just caught them on a day where they weren't firing, that they didn't have big individual performers, even though guys played with lots of spirit, but it just wasn't enough. And I think when you're not controlling things at halfback, it has a big impact on the rest of the team.
Yeah. It's perfect cup rugby. If you're La Rochelle and Ronan O'Gara, I mean, we'll talk about that in a second. It's a perfect cup rugby afternoon execution, and you make off into the sunset, and it's a beautiful feeling, I would suspect. I guess the other point you would make about Leinster in this scenario is, because their pack is so dominant at Pro 14 level and much of European level as well, they are not overly practiced at playing without parity up front. I mean, Ross Byrne does not find himself in that situation very often. Johnny Sexton tended to find himself in that situation more so with Ireland than with Leinster. So do they look like a team who, you know, once, twice a year find themselves in that scenario and then, I was going to say, like, almost forget to mix it up and have that bit of variety that you're talking about. But you would surely think during the week they're aware things could go that way and they will need to mix it up. So it's kind of hard to make too many excuses for them. But there is something maybe in the point that they don't face this scenario very often across the season.
It does feel, Joe, that it's becoming more apparent. It really does, that unless you find yourself in those circumstances a couple of times a year, and it's very hard to prep yourself for it when the chips are down and when you do come up against it in, and you've got people a little bit off their game. So, like I said, there's kind of multiple factors at work there. But there is an issue with the Pro 14. We've said it for a while. We've been trying to promote it as, you know, being, it's not so bad. It's a poor, poor tournament. And the quality is very poor. And I think you look at, you know, what the English teams and what the French teams are having to deliver week on week. And even when the standard might be brilliant, even though the Premiership's been very good, the standard's been very good, it's still a dogfight. Leinster have won the Pro 14 the last few years at a canter in third gear using 59 players. Like, that just shouldn't happen when you're able to delve that deep into your academy and sub-academy and still, you know, produce try bonuses in almost every game. What are you learning from that? You only learn against better teams. And at the moment, other teams are learning from them and will be getting better as a result. But I don't think Leinster are learning a huge amount because of the opposition that they are coming up against week in, week out. And until they do get the Stormers and the Sharks and the other South African teams, and they start getting that that crazy physicality and the different type of game thrown at them, I think they will get to a plateau level of still feeling that shock when they do get the Skeltons of the world coming at them, or the Itojis or the Vunipolas, which ordinarily they don't get.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Because there's no way they can somehow use the Pro 14 to prepare for that, you know. Like, let's give them parity up front or something this evening and try and play on the back foot. You just can't engineer those scenarios in a match. You have to face them for real.
Yeah, you can't. They'll say as well, listen, we physically imposed ourselves on them in the first 15 minutes, so that. That Achilles heel is nonsense. But, you know, when you look back, La Rochelle were even, you know, Leinster came out all guns blazing the first 10, 15 minutes and they won the battle. It's very hard to do that for 80 minutes. And even if you watch some of the La Rochelle defence in those early exchanges, it was still very good. And Leinster really had to work hard for it. But then they really grew into the game when they got their hands in the ball a little bit and they forced indiscipline from Leinster and they, you know, got the scoreboard ticking. You could just sense that they were very patient with their performance and that they could go to multiple aspects. Their scrum was very good. Line out was decent for the most part. Really good quality of passing. Their ruck, their annoyance at the ruck, at Leinster's ruck, but the clarity on their own ball. Kerr Barlow, you know, challenged the pillar defence and, you know, probed in behind. They didn't throw silly 50-50 offloads. It just felt as though they made way more good decisions than bad. And their execution was very good, countered with, you know, Leinster's execution being very poor at pivotal times.
For O'Gara and for Gibbs, I mean, O'Gara in particular, the hype train goes into overdrive now. This is really impressive stuff all of a sudden. You know, Heineken Champions Cup final, second in the top 14. That's kind of dreamland stuff.
It really is, yeah. And, you know, he'll have taken a huge amount of satisfaction from obviously beating Leinster, you know, because of the history and tradition that he's had with Leinster, but also the knowledge that they've been one of the best teams in Europe for the last 3 or 4 years. And consistently in there, and they know that they've delved into a really great performance to be able to better them. And you know, they go into a final with, you know, nothing to lose. Toulouse are going for their fifth title. They've got all the history there. But you know, you look at that La Rochelle defense, and then the other components that they build their attacking game on. I tell you what, it'll take a really good Toulouse performance to better them in Twickenham in a few weeks' time, because Toulouse are very good. Don't get me wrong, and they can mix it up as well. But the miserly aspect of the La Rochelle defense was really the point of difference that I kind of came away from the game and thought, wow, I wasn't anticipating. Really good tackle technique, really good decisions, great line speed, but also being able to cover the backfield. They kind of got everything right. And, you know, at one point, Leinster had to play deep in their own territory because La Rochelle had, you know, lots of numbers in the backfield. But yet their 12 players in the front line were felt like they were doing the job of 14 or 15. So it was a performance definitely built on defense. And then they took their few opportunities very, very well, and you coasted to a comfortable victory ultimately.
What a miserable May for Leinster now, you know. The Rainbow Cup doesn't exactly grab you, I would think. Well, if you were in the shoes of some of the kind of higher profile guys hoping to head on Lions tour and Rainbow Cup is on and Leo Cullen saying, what do you fancy? I mean, would you be kind of thinking, what's the point here? Let's wrap up in cotton wool, or would you use the games? How do you suspect Leinster will use the Rainbow Cup now?
No, you gotta get games. You know, for the guys that are going to go on Lions tours, I think it's vitally important that they stay fresh and stay match fit going into a Lions tour. For those that are going to be left out, those Irish internationals that will miss out, I think it's an opportunity to give some badly needed rest time to a few guys. It's been a long season. People have forgotten that it picked up in August and has, you know, finished last year, and then there was a tiny break and then straight through this one. So there's lots of tired bodies out there. I think it is a good chance for them to put their feet up, get an extended break, switch off from rugby, and then come back for a fresh pre-season, because ultimately in their heads, the season is over. Once this Lions selection is picked on Thursday, the season is going to be exciting for a handful of guys. Well, you know, three or four guys at most in that Leinster setup. And for all those other internationals, you know, to try and get themselves up for Rainbow Cup, and maybe if they haven't had a huge amount of game time this year, there's something in that, build a reputation for the future. But for some of the older heads, it's going to be a tough slog. And I think the coaching ticket need to see that and react accordingly.
So you were obviously captain for the New Zealand tour and therefore would have known you were going on the tour at this stage. Did you know with all the others? Had you heard, or did you just assume? I can't remember, were you surprised in 01 or not?
No, I didn't know in 01. I was hopeful, but okay. To be honest with you, I can't even remember how I found out.
We keep hearing of a lot of Leinster players, like, you know, I guess you're breaking off training and you're at the gym and Sky Sports News comes on. That's kind of how it works.
Well, yeah, no. So 2013, I clearly remember, and I had no idea whether I was going. Again, hopeful, but, you know, not sure. And so I watched it at home. It just happened that, you know, we had a break in schedule. But lots of teams will be, you know, training in their base, and they will take time away from it to build their schedule to make sure that they're all watching together. And from, like, the heartbreaking part is you're going to, you know, there's going to be elation and devastation in certain clubs around the, you know, Britain and Ireland, because you're going to have 30 or 40 bodies being able to see your emotions through that, which is not an easy thing to do. I was glad to watch the 2013 Lions at home with my wife, and I stupidly had mine on Sky Plus delay, like by a minute, and so I was watching it, and I got a text from my sister when Stuart Hogg's name came up, and I just said, get in, and I was like, geez, I didn't know she was such a big Stuart Hogg fan, and then I realised that it had been delayed.
You're going to be on Thursday's show giving a full-bodied reaction to the whole thing, so there's no point going through, you know, squad name by name. And
I hadn't really thought about it, Joe, to be honest with you. I haven't had to do a squad, which is unusual at this point.
You're the lucky one. I don't know how many squads I've read.
Thankless. It's pretty thankless. It really is, because everyone's squad is different than yours. But there's not a million Irish guys. It's probably about six or seven that would think I should really be in this, but there'll be a lot of very nervous guys on Wednesday night.
Yes, there's a lot of not so sure types. So is Johnny Sexton a locked and loaded in type for you, or is he nervous?
If I'm selecting it, he is. If I'm looking at Warren Gatland's squad, I don't think he's locked and loaded. Because of the age profile, because of the issues more recently, but for me that creates an uncertainty, and also the fact that Dan Biggar's definitely going, and Owen Farrell's definitely going, and is he going to pick, you know, one more? And it's very hard to leave Finn Russell out in that regard. He's going to get an awful lot of flack, even though Finn Russell's not a Warren Gatland type of player. So he's got lots of credit in the bank from performances, and particularly what he did against England. So I think he is in, but I think he'll still have a nervous night, because he won't take it for granted.
And you don't see this Lions tour 4 years on from Farrell and Sexton doubling up nicely in New Zealand. Is South Africa, given Sexton's age maybe, and also the challenge South Africa will pose, is the Farrell-Sexton axis not something to expect this time around for you?
No, I don't think you rule it out, but I think, you know, lots of, you look at Gats with his coaching ticket, or, you know, a lot of the personnel that are going in the backroom staff, he goes with the same tried and trusted. They've done a great job previously, and it's hard not to call on people that have delivered for you previously. And I think we'll see that right across the board in any 50-50 cases. They'll go with the guys that were there 4 years ago, or potentially even involved 8 years ago. So I think there is a chance that we'll still see Johnny Sexton and Owen Farrell, but there's a chance that Johnny Sexton might be at home. That's the reality of it. And it depends on where you're talking. You know, here we think, oh, yeah, Johnny should go. In the UK, like, he's not in lots of people's squads.
No.
We have an inflated view versus, you know, what's gone on over there of this current Johnny Sexton. I think we were all huge admirers, you know, 3-4 years ago. It just feels as though, because of the age profile, because of the, you know, playing less, you know, less game time, it does affect your opinion on how someone can perform in a very physical environment.
Yeah. So who are you, if not quite putting your house on, who are the 6-7 that you feel pretty confident Gatland will pick? I'm not asking for your squad. I'm kind of asking you to double guess Gatland almost.
Well, I think Conor Murray will definitely go. I think Furlong will definitely go, and Robbie Henshaw will definitely go. So they're the three firmest for me. I think Tadhg Byrne comes in just after that. I think his utility, the nature of his utility play, really will work in his favour, even though, you know, Gats does love big players as well. So that's where, for me, I was wondering about James Ryan. He got through a good bit of work, but again, when one of the second rows is the standout players against you in a key game, I don't know. I think he will go, but I wouldn't be shocked if he was left out. And I think the only thing that in James Ryan's favour is that is it him or Ian Henderson? And also, Courtney Laws hasn't played yet. And Courtney Laws delivered for Gats 4 years ago, and he's big and physical and tries to throw his body around. So, and he's got that size. Gats always was fixated on understanding the size of his second rows. Alwyn Jones, 120 kilos. You know, Jake Ball, 118, 119 kilos. Paul O'Connell, 109, 110 kilos. That was always a thing with Gats. So expect him to go for bigger players, because you look at the size of that Springbok pack. So James Ryan just in, and to be honest with you, beyond that, I don't know who he's going to pick in the centres. With George North now gone as well, I don't know whether Gary Ringrose makes the team. I wonder, will he take a punt on Manu Tuilagi to offer something different? He's going to play next week or the week after, which is a real risk, but he... you know, if you can get him any way fit and healthy, he just offers something that nobody else in Britain and Ireland does. So I wonder, will he take that risk? But other than that, you know, Henry Slade will probably go, and Farrell will go. Sorry, but from an Irish perspective,
do you see anyone in the back three for Ireland?
I don't think so. Like, if you look, the back three's, you know, you're going to have Johnny May, you're going to have Anthony Watson, you're potentially going to have Jack Nowell as well, who also Gats loves. You could have the three English wingers. Reece Amott and Josh Adams. So there's five wingers. You're not going to take five wingers. Plus the full backs are going to be Hogg and Liam Williams for sure. So I don't know which of our Irish players fits in there. You know, Jacob Stockdale, because of his versatility, play wing and full back, maybe at a push. But I think if you're Van der Merwe is another one that potentially could get in on the wing because of his size and brute force. So I don't anticipate a back three player getting in from Ireland, no.
It's not quite 2009 here, is it?
It's really not. Yeah. And I'm trying to see where else, you know, will there be, you know, you look at the ball carrying ability of a Ronan Kelleher. Is he someone that could be the bolter that, you know, if he could get his line out sorted because of what he's capable of giving you from a carrying perspective? But I just don't know. He hasn't done enough and hasn't been consistent enough, and obviously has lost at the weekend too. So yeah, I don't see too many others jumping out, being brutally honest. I think you're going to have a big Welsh selection, a big English selection, and we'll probably get six or seven. I just haven't picked them all.
Yeah,
so
sure.
if we say, you know, Furlong, Henshaw, Murray, Tyburn, I'm going to say Johnny, and James Ryan, and one other. I'm going to say seven.
Okay. Porter might squeeze in, his versatility. Not sure.
Yeah, but he doesn't really play loose head anymore. You know, that versatility piece is, you have to be doing it week on week. Like, it's a few years since he's played loose head. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a case of, oh, sure, I have that in the bank, I'll just slip across to loose head. There's an art to that as well. So he is very much a tight head now. So, yeah. I don't know. And as well, who else on the tight head from? Yeah, there's not a plethora of tight heads, in fairness. I don't know, Fagerson, will he go instead of someone like Porter? You know, probably.
Right, well, you're on Thursday anyway. Sorry, that for anyone watching YouTube, that was a very parochial How Are the Irish Going to Do chat, for obvious reasons. So you'll be on Thursday to give a fuller view of the squad. We'll also talk Ulster tomorrow. We didn't get a chance to do it this evening. Clock is against us. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone. Hashtag Team of Us, everyone in. Brian, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Well done, Joe. Thanks. Bye.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.